there. You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley.
I am your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner with the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. On this episode, we are talking with Eliza Nelson, the Executive Director of the Oregon Maple Project, about the fascinating art of sugaring our native big leaf maple trees and the work being done to develop a viable maple syrup industry for Oregonians. I'm excited to sit down with her today for the show. So welcome to Conservation Spotlight, Eliza.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Like we were saying kind of before this call started, I heard about the Oregon Maple Project a few years ago through an OSU student and have always been fascinated by this idea because I didn't know that we had the potential to make our own big leaf maple syrup here on the West Coast. So can you start by telling us about your background and how you got interested in big leaf maples?
Yes, I had a similar experience to you, not knowing that it was possible out here. And so I'm from New England, and I was lucky enough to spend a high school semester at an amazing school in Vermont called the Mountain School, which integrated its curriculum with life and work on an organic farm. So we tapped sugar maples in the winter to make syrup, and I was completely enchanted by the experience at age 17. Later, as an adult, I moved to Oregon and fell in love with the forests here, and I became a fourth and fifth grade teacher at another fabulous school called Arbor in Tualatin. And we had an environmental curriculum that was complemented by a large wooded campus and that had a stream where big leaf maples thrived. So I started wondering whether it was possible to tap these trees and make big leaf maple syrup with my students like I had been able to do when I was younger. And it was at the time, it's probably about 2017, there wasn't a really big network in Oregon. It's now growing in Oregon. But there was an old extension article probably from the 1970s. And it pointed me toward Vancouver Island, where there was a community of sugarers, and they called themselves the Vancouver Island Sapsuckers. So I actually traveled up there to their Big Leaf Maple Festival and had my first taste of big leaf maple syrup and just got totally captivated. So came back and began tapping with my students at Arbor School, and also learned just educationally that I think you could teach an entire year on just a maple curriculum. There's so much science, math, poetry, mythology, and history to it. So we had a great time. We made little tiny batches of syrup. And then I got interested enough that when I retired from classroom teaching, I decided to start the Oregon Maple Project.
Wow, that is such a cool story. And I love, first of all, the Vancouver Island Sapsuckers is such a cute name.
They're pretty great up there.
Oh my gosh. And there's a whole festival for big leaf maple. I did not know that there was such a movement around this one tree that spans throughout the whole West Coast. That is so cool.
Yes, I feel like they're the original organized group of hobby tappers up there. And there is a book that we all have used that's written by Gary Backlund. And it's the one published book so far that is just about big leaf maple tapping. And Gary was spearheading the festival up there. And they haven't been doing it in recent years, but it really was how a lot of us in the Pacific Northwest got started through their movement and their knowledge.
Can you tell us what is the Oregon Maple Project and what is the mission and the work being done through this organization?
We are an educational nonprofit focused on building community in connection to nature. And we are a working maple farm, or sugar bush, as they're called, producing big leaf maple syrup from our sugar shack each winter. And we are lucky enough to be located at Camp Colton in Colton, Oregon, which is a beautiful 85-acre property that has a couple of streams that flow into the Mooala, and beautiful, beautiful forests, and lots of other great things going on there too, other nonprofits and other events. And we invite students and community members to come out and join us in the wet winter woods to learn about the big leaf maple and this fascinating process of turning its sap into syrup. We teach sugaring workshops. We offer maple field trips and family maple camps, and then a season-long sugaring collective for folks who want to tap their own trees and join us at a community sugaring party at the end of the season, where we all boil our sap together and make a batch of communal big leaf syrup. So that's our model, and we always get the question of or the exclamation of, "I didn't know you could make syrup out west." And that's sort of part of our mission too, is yes, we can. Let's do it together.
Especially, that's such a good activity to get folks out in kind of the rainy season and feel like they're still able to enjoy nature time, even outside of the typical summer months when a lot of people get outside.
Yeah, it is a really great winter activity.
So, what is the process of sugaring big leaf maples, and how is it different from conventional sugar maple tapping in the East Coast?
There are a lot of differences and a lot of similarities. I'd say the key difference is that in the Pacific Northwest, with big leaf maples, our season is longer and more unpredictable. So we don't have a deep freeze in the winter, followed by a kind of breakneck spring thaw that happens in the regions with sugar maples. So we can begin tapping as early as late November and tap all the way through March. So it's a kind of a winter long season, and what we're looking for are freeze thaw cycles that happen throughout the winter, because that's what pressurizes the trees and allows us to get sap flowing out of a tap hole. Another key difference is that big leaf maple sap is not as sweet as sugar maple sap. It comes out of the tree usually about 1% sugar. So that's about half of the sugar content, maybe even less than half of the sugar content of sugar maple sap. So it takes we have to boil our sap longer to get to that syrup, which is supposed to be 66% sugar, in order to be shelf stable. It gives our syrup a really complex, rich taste, and it means that our ratio of sap to syrup is, when all is said and done, it can be 100 to 1, and sugar maple is 40 to 1. So it's a little harder for us to get to syrup out in the Pacific Northwest, but we're learning a lot, and it's really fun to be doing something where there's a lot of citizen science involved, and the questions that people ask when they come to our programs are the questions that we're all trying to learn. And there is a lot happening besides the Oregon Maple Project. We have maple colleagues all over Oregon and Washington. Oregon State University has the Oregon Tree Tappers Project. It's a great website where you can learn even where to buy big leaf maple syrup and all kinds of things about getting into production. Washington State University Extension is doing a lot as well, and University of Washington had a big leaf maple project, research project. So we're really building a maple movement in the Pacific Northwest.
What are some of the things that they're researching?
So the Oregon State Project is focused on getting community or getting commercial production going in Oregon and seeing if this is a viable economic enterprise for landowners in a non-timber forest product that they could produce from their land. And also a lot of study there on the best practices, trying to establish best practices in terms of cleanliness of our equipment and high quality product and really good state-of-the-art equipment and procedures, and all of which we are learning from the Northeast. We have lots of support from sugar maple experts in the Midwest and Northeast. And then there's a lot of citizen science research going on with surveys and things at Washington State Extension. And University of Washington did a study on the ideal tapping conditions for big leaf maple sugaring. So really lots of data that we're starting to develop in addition to anecdotal experience, and kind of a we have producer association now in Oregon, so there's a community comparing notes and developing knowledge together. So it's a really exciting time. And we are using a lot of the advancements from the industry in the Northeast. So a lot of us are using tubing systems that connect to the trees and are attached to vacuum pumps that can draw more sap out of the trees. We are also using reverse osmosis filters to concentrate the sugars in the sap before we even begin boiling it. We have to do a lot of freezing of our sap because we often don't get as much in one sap run that would make it worthwhile to do a boil. You kind of need at least 100 gallons to make a boil for syrup worthwhile, because you want to get at least 1 gallon when you're finished with that boil. So if we can concentrate our sap and reduce it down with a reverse osmosis filter, and then freeze it and thaw it later for a boil, that's really helpful.
I do want to touch on, besides just the human role of tapping maples for sap and syrup, what role do big leaf maples have in their ecosystems, and why is it important to preserve them?
Yeah, I love that question. The big leaf maple is one of our three native maples in the Pacific Northwest, along with the vine maple and the Douglas or canyon maple. And the big leaf maple is our largest, and it's our best sap producer, just given that it grows plentifully and to a great size. And it is incredibly important ecosystem tree. Just each tree alone has so much habitat on it. Once you start looking around at big leaf maples and looking at the mature ones that have incredibly moist, deeply furrowed bark, you can see that there's an entire world on that bark. There's moss that grows really thickly on top of it, and licorice ferns that grow out of the moss. There are sap sucker holes very routinely. The birds that drink the sap out of big leaf maples, and some people say if there's a lot of sap sucker holes, that might be a sweet tree that we want to tap ourselves. The flowers that bloom in the spring are edible and incredible. People actually batter fry them and serve them with big leaf maple syrup, but they also are really good on salads, and they're really beautiful, big clumps. And they turn into samaras that are really important food for squirrels and other creatures. The flowers too, some beekeepers have their bees in amongst the big leaf maples in the spring, and they make big leaf maple honey. which is an incredible, has an incredible taste to it. And that's really one of the first trees to burst out in flower in our Pacific Northwest forests. It's also a really important riparian tree, shading and keeping stream banks from eroding and giving good salmon habitat. And it has not been, I think it's been underappreciated in recent years because it's also a really resilient tree that some have called maybe a weed. It's very hard to get rid of a big leaf maple once it's taken root because it will grow back from a root system after you cut it down. And it will grow back not just one stem, but in a coppice clump of 3 to 5 to 7 stems, and those will grow up to maturity. So it's a survivor tree, and it provides to so many.
Yes, I agree. The resilience of the big leaf maple is one of the key things that I've noticed too, especially, our county was impacted by the 2020 Labor Day wildfires, and the burn area is quite large. But one thing that's really obvious when you go into the burn area is just all of the big leaf maples that were some of the first green to reappear after the fires, and they bounced back in those kind of coppice shapes that you mentioned. So now a lot of them are more shrubby than a single stem tree that we're used to seeing, but I mean they're still providing those benefits that you spoke to, and they're holding the soil and providing shade and everything. So I think that was just one of the things I was really impressed about the big leaves, is just seeing how much they bounce back after such a destructive fire like that.
They are as yeah, resilience is the perfect word for them, and they those coppice clumps are excellent for tapping because we can put a tap in every single stem, and it seems as though the young stems for big leaf maple provide often more sap than the more mature trees. We don't quite
Wow.
know why yet. That's one of those great citizen science questions.
Just a quick update. If you are now joining us, I'm here with Eliza Nelson, the Executive Director with Oregon Maple Project. And you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. So you were just telling us a bit about the tapping process and how the freeze-thaw process is vital in order to get some syrup out of the tree themselves. But I'm sure one thing that a lot of listeners might be thinking of is, does the tapping harm the tree at all? It sounds like it does involve, drilling into the bark and then taking from the tree. So, is there anything that actually damages the tree in this process? And how do you protect the tree from being damaged?
Yes, really important question. And we do cause an injury to the tree when we tap it. We are drilling in with a 5/16 inch drill bit, about an inch and a half in, to access the sap in the xylem tubing. And that creates a wound that the tree heals very successfully, usually. But once a wound is healed, there's scar tissue. And so that section of vascular tissue in the tree is scarred for the future, and you wouldn't be able to get sap out of that probably 6 inches above and below that tap hole where there's a scar tissue in the behind the bark in the vascular system of the tree. So we are very careful to rotate around the tree where we put tap holes each season and each year. And we are careful to use clean drill bits and clean spiles that we hammer into the trees gently. And it's pretty amazing when we take our taps out at the end of the season or at the end of a tap run to see how quickly the tree can heal over, especially the young, fast-growing trees. Sometimes it's hard to even locate the tap hole from two seasons or last season if the tree has really successfully healed. So it doesn't damage the tree, but it is a wound, and the tree can heal well from the wound if we're using good procedures, clean equipment.
So I know you mentioned a little bit about some research that is currently underway to find out the market viability for producing big leaf maple syrup on a larger scale. But can you speak to what the current market is like, especially in Oregon, for this type of syrup and where people might be able to purchase it?
Yes, it's exciting that it's starting to become available, and you don't have to make a pilgrimage to Vancouver Island to get your first taste. We at the Oregon Maple Project, we make sure that every single person who comes to any of our programs, or if we're tabling at an event, that everybody gets a taste of big leaf maple syrup that we have made. And we are probably going to have enough to start selling to our participants soon if they would like to purchase bottles. In Oregon, there are a growing number of producers who are starting to sell off of their farms, and the tab on the Oregon State Project, the Oregon Tree Tappers website, has a producer tab for sales. And probably folks will start to see big leaf maple syrup for sale in farmers markets or at farm stands. The Oregon Farm Direct bill now includes big leaf maple syrup as a farm direct product that we can sell easily from the locations where it's made. And the commercial producer who is making the most currently in the Pacific Northwest is up in the North Cascades in Acme, Washington. And that's Neal's Big Leaf Maple Syrup, an incredible product. He sells his online. But it people will start to be able to access big leaf maple a lot more frequently in the coming years. The flavor of big leaf maple syrup is incredible. It's really complex. It has a succession of tastes on the palate, I think. When you just even have a little spoonful, you'll think it tastes one way, and then it will kind of switch on your tongue. And I love hearing people's descriptions of it. And one of my favorite descriptions was someone said, "Ooh, this is the espresso of maple syrup." It tastes as complex as our forests look. And I think it makes sense when you look at big leaf maple sugaring here in the winter. We're tromping past sword fern, and there might be some blackberry left. And the forests are still very green and alive in the winter when we're tapping. And I think you can taste the complexity of our forests in our syrup.
That's really, really beautiful. I'm going to keep that in mind next time I get an opportunity to taste some. So you touched on this a little bit previously about indigenous kind of mythology with big leaf maple. Can you speak to any other uses that historically have gone back to indigenous cultures that you know of with big leaf maple?
Yes, I know there are those in the Indigenous community who can speak to this much better than I can, but from my reading, I've definitely been aware that the wood of the big leaf maple has been really important in Indigenous communities for all kinds of needs, implements, and transportation, all kinds of uses for the beautiful wood. And the leaves, being just incredibly large and tough, have been used as the original food wrap, which is brilliant. And they're just so enticing, these leaves that you can cover your entire face with, or your head. Kids will often hold them up and be dwarfed by them. But they're also incredibly useful. And the flowers also were a part of the indigenous diet for sure.
So, how can people in the Willamette Valley or anywhere in Oregon really get involved with the Oregon Maple Project?
That, yeah. So we would love to have you come taste syrup and become just join in any of our programs. We have some upcoming ones this month that people could go to our website and sign up for. We have our first sugaring workshop of the winter season in November 16th, I believe. And we still have space in that. And that's just a 2-hour workshop where you get introduced to the art of big leaf maple sugaring and get a taste of our syrup and spend time together in the woods, getting a little hands-on experience. And we have tapping kits for sale if people want to go home with a little bit of startup equipment. And we also have a family maple camp, which will be a couple hours for families and with children of all ages to come and help out in the woods with tapping and sap collection and to learn about this process. And so that one is on Thanksgiving weekend. And then our Sugaring Collective, which is for those who have access to trees, whether they have land with a lot of big leaf maples or whether they live in an urban neighborhood with one big leaf in the neighborhood and they want to join together as neighbors to try to tap it, they can become part of our season-long community that has a workshop at the beginning of the season. We give equipment as part of the membership, and we also boil together at a community sugaring party where everybody brings the sap they have collected and frozen over the winter and contributes to the boil and gets some big leaf maple syrup at the end. So those are our ones that are coming up, but there's lots on our website that people can check out.
Well, we are coming to the end of our talk today, which has been so lovely. Are there any other closing thoughts, words of wisdom, any other information about the Oregon Maple Project that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Get their big leaf eyes on and start paying attention to these trees, which suddenly you'll find are everywhere. And right now they're incredibly beautiful. It's an especially golden fall, and their leaves are carpeting the forest floor. And just it's such a gift to watch them through all the seasons. And they really become a big part of my life everywhere I go in the Pacific Northwest, finding them as friends. So I hope others can do that too.
Well, thank you so much, Eliza.
Thank you, Chelsea. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I've been talking with Eliza Nelson, the executive director of the Oregon Maple Project, about the importance of the big leaf maple and the sweet rewards of connection between humans and nature. And I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner for the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Check out OregonMapleProject.org for more information and tune in to our next First Friday webinar on December 5th at 12 p.m. to learn more about big leaf maple tapping from Clackamas OSU Extension. You can register at our website at marionswcd.net. And thank you for tuning into this episode of Conservation Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation on the Oregon Maple Project. Every effort counts, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit our website and our Facebook page for follow-up information and resources on how you can contribute to local conservation efforts. Also, sharing this podcast with others is a great way to spread awareness and encourage positive action. And if you like what you heard here on Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ at 100.7 or 88.5, the third Wednesday every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening and keep up the conservation conversation.